Have you ever thought about the relationship between beauty and justice? You got to sit with it for a minute. But the idea that we can pair what is right with what is beautiful is really something. Mass Design Group's new book argues that justice is beauty. They're a nonprofit architecture firm focused on buildings for underserved populations. And in the past decade, they've created a hospital on a terraced hillside in Rwanda that reduces the spread of disease, a cholera treatment center in Haiti, which treats its own water, and the National Memorial for Peace and Justice in Montgomery, Alabama, commemorating victims of lynching in the U.S. Justice is Beauty, which chronicles those projects, is featured as a part of the Boston Book Festival this month, of which WBUR is a media partner. And we welcome now Michael Murphy, the founding principal and executive director of Mass Design Group. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
So, Michael, I couldn't read the book and I can't talk about the book and this relationship between how we define our physical environment and justice outside of the context right now of the coronavirus pandemic. So I think I want to ask you, I have to believe that at some moment when this pandemic began, you must have had a flashback or drew a connection between what is happening in this pandemic to some of your experience in working on these design and architectural projects in Haiti, Rwanda, or elsewhere. Was there that kind of flashback moment as this pandemic started to unfold?
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, absolutely. And I think probably most of us had a very similar moment. But for me, it was really the first week of March. I was just coming back from family leave. My son was born in late January, and my first trip was a flight to Los Angeles to give a lecture. And we were just starting to hear about the pandemic to our shores. And I remember flying to LA, being worried about the infection and knowing that there was that airflow could be a primary mode of transmission. And in the 3 days I was there, coming back through LAX and flying back to Boston, being the only one with a mask on, sitting in the plane, very, very concerned about transmission and having this real flashback to my time working in Rwanda in wards where tuberculosis, the airborne disease or multi-drug resistant tuberculosis, was transmitted in hallways and in other spaces and being very afraid of contamination. And it clicked at that moment, you know, that it wasn't just hospitals where diseases are transferred. It wasn't just spaces that we know there's infections, but all the spaces around us, our houses, our schools, of course, our hospitals, our airports are contagious if there is something in the air that can contaminate us, and that breathing is really a spatial problem, and our access to fresh air is a problem mitigated by the buildings around us.
Okay, that's terrifying. And in listening to you say it, I almost feel kind of short of breath. What did you do when you got home? How have you been working with that idea since March when this revelation hit you on the airplane?
Well, I think it is terrifying, but it's also empowering. I mean, I think all of us in the world right now are going through a very similar spatial awakening. You know, we're looking at the walls around us and realizing that these systems that are supposed to introduce fresh air are not working as effectively as they could. Could we open windows? Could we protect our families in more effective ways? And that spatial awakening, I think, is a really profound shift in the way we think about our world, and because it gives us access to tools that we can change the buildings around us, change our ventilation systems, and change the way we understand air as a contaminating agent or a healing agent. And that's not just about the coronavirus. You start to think about air being contaminated with off-gassing or emissions or smoke, like we saw in the fires in California. Of course, carbon emitted into the atmosphere affecting neighborhoods. You know, these are, and our climate, these are all issues related to our ability to be around fresh air.
So let's begin to tie this now, Michael, to the thesis of this book, the manifesto as I read it from Mass Design Group, that justice is beauty. I'm going to ask you to read a little bit of the book. Our producer Zoe found this paragraph, And I remember when I read it, when I was reading the book, it struck me, especially in this context. It's on page 16, and it has to do with when you were building the cholera hospital in Haiti after a major outbreak there. Maybe you can read that for us.
Sure. It sometimes takes a disaster to reveal the fraying threads that undermine the social fabric of a community. In December 2011, cholera was that tear, uncovering the true infrastructural vulnerabilities of a country with so much of its building stock broken to begin with. The outbreak also revealed that it was not a lack of medical care or drugs or good intentions that paved Haiti's road to hell, but the very real and alarmingly limited number of working wastewater pipes that lay beneath it. What enabled cholera and crippled Haiti was a complete failure of the built environment.
Of course, hearing you write there about the fraying threads, the infrastructure vulnerabilities, the disproportionate impact that that had on the poor and vulnerable in Port-au-Prince, for example, really brings home the data we consistently hear about the coronavirus and its disproportionate impact on vulnerable populations, people of color, low-income families. How do we begin to think about here, this realization about our weakened infrastructure, of the vulnerabilities it creates, and what we can do different in our built environment? How do we begin to connect these dots?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, these epidemics, these challenges really stress our systems, and they reveal the cracks in those systems. We often say buildings heal or hurt. And here's an example of where we're seeing the built environment around us really hurt our public, the people most affected by the coronavirus. Of course, we're all affected by the coronavirus, but those most disproportionately affected are communities of color, but especially folks living in conditions like nursing homes, senior housing, incarcerated individuals, those within structures where they are most disenfranchised and unable to control the environment around them effectively. And this is a real concern that we should have, not just in addressing the kind of structural injustices in our community and advocating for those who are having trouble advocating for themselves in these conditions, but also thinking about the built environment that is encasing them, that they're suffering within. Can we redesign senior housing to breathe better, to be more effective, to be healing? Obviously, questions of incarceration surround us every day. We have to not just decarcerate our problem of mass incarceration, but think critically about spaces of detention, if we have them at all, and about how they're affecting people's health and their ability to live. All of these questions are interrelated with the buildings around us. And so designing spaces that are healing is about thinking about our physiological health, our sociological health, and also our environmental health.
All right. So now with these spaces that are healing, you've taken us to the justice part. So now take us the next step to the beauty part, and maybe give us a story or a specific example from one of your designs.
You know, I think we have this, and there's this misunderstanding, I believe, in the way we evaluate buildings around us. And we often talk about buildings as beautiful or sometimes ugly. Often, a lot of times we talk about them as ugly. Or we talk about them as effective systems, good housing or poor housing. And we don't often talk about those things as interrelated, and that the choice between one or the others we really have found is a false choice. You know, all buildings affect our social, our environmental, and our political systems. The question is whether we really acknowledge that or not, and then are designing those systems to serve the public that they're in most effectively. And if we do so, this creates beauty, not just the form that we see, but the beauty is the perfect or the successful resolution of all of these systems coming together and serving the public in its most effective form. I really learned about this working in Rwanda with Dr. Paul Farmer, the great humanitarian designer. I'd call him really an architect himself and my first mentor of architecture. You know, and he talked about designing hospitals and building hospitals around the world, and he always focused on, this is a funny story, but he always would focus on the fish pond. It was always important that each medical facility had a fish pond. I always wondered why. He said to me once, you know, actually at the time, the Minister of Health of Mexico, Julio Frank, who ended up being the dean of the Harvard School of Public Health, came to one of these facilities, and he came in, he saw the trees that Paul had spent so much time planting and the gardens and the fish pond, and he pronounced dignificación. This is the creation of dignity, the commitment and care to not just a facility that treats those with poor health or need treatment, but those that care about their whole being and their whole selves and creates beauty for them to repair in those spaces. That's a fundamental thing that the built environment is offering us at all times or taking away from us. And we should really focus on both of those things at once.
And just to note, I you may have mentioned this, but Paul Farmer is the founder of Partners in Health, which I think was begun as a local organization here in the area. We have just a little bit of time left, Michael. Many of the spaces that Mass Design Group creates are communal. And you talk a lot about that in the book, Justice is Beauty. But we are now in a time when communal spaces have become not only almost irrelevant, but obsolete or anathema, at least for a while. Yeah. What does that mean? And what does it mean for your work?
You know, I think you know, what you're talking about is really the public realm. It's such an important thing for us to really think about right now, because the public realm is changing. It's changing in front of us, changing beneath our feet. It's shifting, but it's not going away. I wouldn't say it's being eradicated or erased. It's just changing. We're both seeing public realms that are being taken away from us. Let's say the restaurant, for example, is a form of public realm that few of us are going into. Of course, the theater or collective cultural spaces. But we're also seeing new public realms emerge, you know, the restaurant going out into the street and taking over new spaces that are providing that public realm again, where it's so necessary for us to gather. And we're seeing how essential it is for us as a public to gather and how desperate we are to find that connection. I certainly feel it all the time, you know, staring at Zoom calls or on the computer, that we're not able to connect with each other. Individuals in front of us, you know, see their muscles in their face change as we have a dialogue, or see them in person, or get to do things together. These are all, we're kind of like suffering in this isolation, and I think there's a desperate need for connectivity again. Now, one of the things I think the public realm forces us to do is consider who we are as a public and how we come together. You think about the Boston Common, for example, one of the great public realms in our country, and really one of the first public spaces is defined by that. And it's a very definition, the common, where our common needs and our common services are brought together and shared and navigated together under a shared collective needs and collective rights. This is essential for us as a public to sort of define ourselves and come together to advocate for what we need.
Well, that is Michael Murphy, an architect and the founding principal and executive director of Mass Design Group. The new book, Justice is Beauty, profiles the group's first 10 years. He'll be speaking on Friday at 7:30 as part of the Boston Book Festival, of which WBUR is a media partner. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Tina.